Live from the HananiaAutos.com studio.
Live.
This is the Gus Bradley Show.
Gus Bradley Show.
Jaguars head coach Gus Bradley and former Jaguar Jeff Loggeman are brought to you by Ticket Exchange and by EverBank. The Gus Bradley Show begins right now.
And welcome into the Gus Bradley Show. Jeff Loggeman alongside the head coach. As we roll along for another week of the NFL season this week, Kansas City Chiefs coming up last week, Thursday night game in Nashville, Tennessee. And Gus, quite a bit of change since last Thursday with your football team, and it started with the firing of Greg Olsen as offensive coordinator on Saturday and the promotion of Nathaniel Hackett to the offensive coordinator position. Talk about the firing of Greg Olsen. That had to be difficult for you. I mean, you guys have been friends for a long time. It's never easy to let a coach go right when you're in mid-stride.
No, you generally don't want to make a habit of it. It's tough. Greg and I are friends and continue. But it's just difficult. I think we had a long discussion. We talked on, Friday, and we talked again on Saturday. And just felt for the team, it was my decision. But I just felt for the team it was the direction we needed to go. So really wasn't a reflection of Greg because he's done some great things for us. He's a tremendous asset. But I think as far as where we were and where we are heading, I think, we just had to make a decision. It's always tough.
And because that's not an easy decision, is there a process, people you lean on, people you talk with to kind of maybe get a feel for experience in a situation like this?
Right. I did not. I didn't want to have the coaches involved or talk to the players and, have that all come up. I think after, I was trying to get a closer handle on how things were going and just where we were as a team. And, I did talk to Shad and I talked to Dave and just told them really my intentions. And, they were great as far as being very supportive. But it still had to be a decision that I slept on and then went with on Saturday.
And the offense, I mean, clearly over the last couple of weeks struggled and have struggled. They've had spurts where they've been good, but for the most part, the expectations, coming off a year in which they, had, 23 points a game, something in that nature. Blake Bortles threw 35 touchdowns. The expectations to continue along that track, which is to improve, didn't happen. It wasn't happening.
Right. And I think there's expectations, but I think – you try to get an idea, where is the team going? Where is the offense going from where we were at? And I just felt like, was there going to be a change going into Kansas City? Would we come out with a different mindset? Would we come out and was there confidence in the whole team that things were going to change? And, I just didn't feel that part of it. So, went with the change. And now Nathaniel's running the show, and he's done a great job thus far.
Does it help that Nathaniel Hackett, he has experience, he obviously was the offensive coordinator in Buffalo 2013, 2014 with Doug Marrone, and Doug Marrone is on the coaching staff, he's the offensive line coach. Does that help the process because there's some similar familiarity amongst the staff?
Right. I think that it helps, although we're in a different system. But there's going to be a different philosophy, and I think Doug Marrone understands Nathaniel's philosophy. But I think when we brought Nathaniel on to be the quarterback coach, I interviewed him to say, all right, we really like Greg Olsen. We like the direction he's going to go. But it could be we have success and Greg Olsen moves on. And if that does take place, is Nathaniel a guy that could be the offensive coordinator so we keep the same system and run it and there's some familiarity with our quarterback? So, I really try to set it up with that in mind and didn't think it would go this way. But, with Nathaniel's gifts and his talents, I think it's a good fit for us where we are right now.
It can't be easy for him. I mean, with the circumstances. I mean, obviously, as an individual, you're excited about an opportunity to call plays, an opportunity to run the ship, be the offensive coordinator. But at the same token, okay, well, the reason I got this is because somebody else got fired.
Right.
So how did he handle that?
I thought he handled it great. Believe me, we all take responsibility. And when I mean we all, I'm talking about the coaches, the head coach, the coordinators, the position coaches, the players. We all take responsibility for where we're at. So, I think there's part of that with Nathaniel. He feels responsible for it, but he's also excited about the opportunity. So it is mixed. But it didn't take him long. Once he was told, he knew he was a true professional, and he went right to work, and we had great conversations about it, the direction we wanted to go, felt very confident, and the offensive staff came together, and they've been going ever since.
And the most important thing probably in all of this is when he steps in front of the room for the first time, you know, as offensive coordinator. How did that transition go, and as far as the process that you handled it, and how did that process go for Nathaniel for his first time up in front of the room?
Well, it's always a challenge because, you know, you don't know how the team's going to respond. But I thought they handled it great. You know, it's not surprising to me. I thought our team is, you know, they're a great bunch of professionals. And they know Nathaniel, and they trust Nathaniel. And they've each had some instances on the field or in meeting rooms where they dealt with him. So they know what he's all about. And I think when he provided the vision where we're going from here, it became really clear, and it's something that our offense, I think, really related to and was really excited about.
Well, I think the one benefit, I mean, his personality is unique.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to say that he's been termed a bundle of energy. I would term him more as being extremely animated.
Yeah, you know what, and you know, a great deal of energy, and that's the other part. I thought, you know, where we are right now offensively, we do need energy, we do need juice, and we need a guy that's got a sway and a lot of confidence. Now that's Nathaniel Hackett. When he walked in front of that offense, a great deal of confidence, and the players know that. So there's great trust in him. They feel that, they sense that part of him, and you know, so you're watching in practice, and you see the offense really respond to him, and the defense responded as well. So heading in the right direction.
And also, what happened this week? Blake Bortles talked about that he was going to bring in one of his people that he's worked with in the offseason, Tom House, and also, I want to make sure I get the name right, I'm probably going to butcher the name, Adam Dedeaux. And Adam, I guess, came in this week and worked with Blake on Monday and Tuesday, I believe. What were your thoughts on that when that first kind of went down? There's a lot of coaches that are like, whoa, wait a minute here. You know, too many people talking to our quarterback in the middle point of the season can be too much. And there are others that say, you know what, if it can help a guy that is clearly struggling, then it's a good thing.
Right. I think there's two ways to look at it. I do agree that you want to be careful how many people talk to the quarterback. But in this case, you know, I know Adam. And we've had a chance when Blake first came to our program, to our organization, we reached out and researched the Tom House, you know, way of doing things and how they train quarterbacks. So we actually brought it up to Blake. And then Blake read into it, got some information on it, and felt comfortable about it, and then went out and saw him and came back and felt like it was a great experience for him. So we knew the people involved. Blake started to develop a relationship with them, and it was something we felt very comfortable about. So we've always told Blake, hey, if you want them in here, we're willing to help you in any way, make sure they get here. You have that you know, support from us. And, you know, let's take a look at it every year, whether it's in training camp or after the season. So it was brought up to Blake a couple weeks ago. Hey, look at this. If you want them in here, let's get this set up for you. What time do you think is best? And he just felt this week was good.
And with Adam coming in, after the process, you know, he's done working with Blake. Is there a conversation between Adam and Nathaniel Hackett, who is also now, you know, his coordinator and position coach, to where – so everybody can kind of be on the same page. So Adam can say to Nathaniel, hey, look, you know, these are the things that I think that I see with
right.
him. And because I know him, I've worked with him, and here's what I'm looking at, and here's what I think he might be doing wrong. And maybe was there any communication after the fact about that?
Yeah, there was communication between all three of us. But, you know, I think people think Adam's coming in here and saying, okay, on 7-step drop, you need to do this. On 5-step drop, when you do 3-step, it's nothing like that. You know, Nathaniel's in with the scheme and his demeanor on the field. And it might be just some subtle things that Adam looks at and says, hey, you know what? You got away from this a little bit. Make sure you use your legs a little bit more. Or, you know, but there's a sense of trust, a sense of calm that he brings. And I think that's relationship is. So amongst all three of us, great trust. It's not an ego thing. It's not, you know, this is my chance to make a name for myself and help Blake Bortles. It's just, you know, it's almost like a strong friendship that, you know, Blake trusts and we all trust.
Well, now that that has happened, you've had 2 days of practice. Do you see improvement, change, whether it be mechanics, whether it be the way he handles himself,
right.
anything the last 2 days?
I think it's, you know, with Adam, it's more just a tightening up some of the things that he was doing on the field. You know, I think whenever you have change like that with Nathaniel, Blake and Nathaniel have a great relationship. So as far as being on the same page, I think you're seeing signs of that. So, you know what? Let's just let the whole process take place and let's see how it goes. But very optimistic, very excited about the progress that was made.
At any point, you know, with him struggling, early in the games, it seems to be where he's struggling most. And then all of a sudden, in the end of the game, playing catch-up, up-tempo offense, he seems to have more success. Has there been any discussions amongst you, Dave Caldwell, the offensive coaches, that, you know, hey, look, at some point, if it's not getting better, you know, do we make a change? What do we do? How do we react?
No, none of those conversations came up. I think we looked at, as like I said earlier, with the offense. I mean, we all take responsibility. I know it's going to be put on the head coach. It's going to be put on the offensive coordinator. It's going to be put on the quarterback. But we understand that, hey, we all need to own up to what took place, and let's get it right. And I think that's what this week has been all about. And when you have a Thursday game, it gives you a little bit more time to really clear your mind and try to make decisions what are best for the organization. And I think we made them. And I think our players have responded, Blake's responded, and the whole offense has. So, you know, let's just keep getting better each practice and see where it takes us on Sunday.
And I think most importantly, when you watch a player who's struggling, whether it be a quarterback or whether it be a wide receiver, offensive lineman, it doesn't matter. The body language of that player, but then more importantly, the body language of those that are around it and reacting to it. Are you seeing that body language in a negative way, or are you seeing it starting to improve this week in practice?
I think when you look at body language, some people say, you know what, you have bad body language. Stop, you know, having bad body language. But there's something that's causing that. So, you know, we got to look at what is the root of it. You know, what is causing this? And it might be frustration. It might be, you know, missed a throw or whatever, or missed a read. And, you know, there's some things that lead to it. The body language can happen with anybody. It can happen with an offensive lineman. Maybe you just don't see it. So I think with the whole team, it's one of those situations that, you know, you got to be able to quickly recover in this league. And, you know, I think that's really been the message for our whole team is that, you know, things may happen in the game, adjust, recover, and let's go. And let's not, you know, hang on it too long.
All right, well, let's take a break here on the Gus Bradley Show. I'm eventually going to get to some phone calls if you'd like to dial in and get ready for when we do, and probably after the next segment. The number is 904-355-6351 or outside the calling area, 1-800-355-NFL1, right here on the Gus Bradley Show on the Jaguars Radio Network.
Welcome back to the HananiahAutos.com studio. The Gus Bradley Show continues right now.
Join Coach Bradley at the 7th Annual McKenzie's Run, a 5K run and walk, plus a one-mile fun run on November 19th at Everbank Field. See Jackson DeVille and The Roar, plus a fun after-party with live music and games. Participants finish inside the stadium and appear on the world's largest video boards. The run benefits the Mackenzie Noel Wilson Foundation and their mission to help young people recognize their full potential. Visit mckenziesrun.org to register. I was going to let you read that.
I know. I really should have. I mean, it's, you know what? It's a great event.
They're joining you.
Yeah. You know what? Been a part of it. Been fortunate to be a part of it. And such a great charity event. And just to get to know the Wilson family and to find out, you know, all that she entailed and what their family is about. And it's it continues to grow every year, the number of participants and the number of good that it does for so many people.
Can you run anymore?
How far?
could you
I can outrun you? Say,
well,
I think,
wait a minute. There's a 1 mile fun run.
Oh yeah, yeah.
I could probably do it.
I'm usually not involved. I just start the race, Logs. I just start the race.
Yeah. When I was reading that, I was going, okay, it's a 5K run and walk. Okay, the walk part would be okay, and then a 1 mile fun run. So I couldn't do a 5K run. I could do the walk part, and I might be able to do the 1 mile fun run.
Well, you decide what it is, and I'll make sure to start it for you, Logs.
I want you to go with me. Share the pain.
That's right. That's right.
Hey, the last couple days have been certainly exciting in the professional sports world. Cleveland Indians, Chicago Cubs. And I know you guys are grinding on game plan, but did you ever just kind of take a break and say, you know what, let me just check in on the game and just, you know, take a break?
Well, you know, we heard about it, you know, last night, Game 7. So it was on the TV in the hallway, and, you know, so you take a glimpse at it. But I know that I saw some interviews afterwards and some of the conversations that the players had about, you know, what did you do with the rain delay? You know, and they took a group in. I think the whole team went in the weight room, and one of the players talked. And I was interested in what he said at that time. And I know it had a lot of impact. So, you know, I've been had a chance to study their manager, and very similar philosophies, you know, when his time was in Tampa. And so it's intriguing to me. And just to see how his players talked through that whole process was pretty cool.
Pretty amazing to me. Basically, going into Game 6, you got to win both of them to win it. And I watched parts of Game 6, and then last night watched a good part of Game 7. And the way they came back, I mean, they were down throughout the course of the game, and then all of a sudden – or, excuse me, they were up most of the game, and then they lost the lead there in the last bottom of the ninth. The guy hits a two-run home run, and then to be able to win it. There's got to be something to that, you know, as a baseball team to be able to stay the course.
You know, what we talk in football in the game that it's not how you start, you know, it's how you finish, or, you know, just because you start well doesn't mean anything, and, you know, how you go through the whole thing. And that really happened in baseball. I mean, they got off to a great start, and it looked promising, but then Cleveland came back in the end and, you know, sent it to extra innings. And, I mean, everything you'd probably hope for in a Game 7, you know, an emotional time, extra innings, you know, everybody on the, you know, on the edge of their seats. So, you know, it sounded like it was a great game to watch from start to finish.
One of the greatest baseball games I've ever watched. And I didn't even get to watch the extra innings. I mean, once they got to that rain delay, I was like, I just can't keep my eyes open anymore. I had to call and I said, I'll just watch the highlights in the morning.
Yeah, that's not how you finish logs.
Well, you know what? I finished strong, Gus, because I can tell you I got plenty of rest last
night.
Yeah,
I bet.
That was good. But a lot of fun. Getting back to the football team, you know, with the change that you made at coordinator, you've had 2 days. You know, we talked about 2 days to kind of look at Blake when he's had an opportunity to work with Adam. The 2 days of practice that you've had so far with the offense and the tempo, the energy, the attitude, how has that been the last 2 days?
It's been very good, very good. So, you know, my nature is generally optimistic. And so, you know, I think it was interesting for me to go out there and just see how the players respond, just how our coaches respond. Here's a new leader that's in charge on the offensive side.
How did they?
And I thought they did a great job. It was good, that familiarity. If you're going to, you know, no one wants to do it in the middle of the season. But with that, I think everybody understood Nathaniel and what was important to him. He made it real clear. The direction was clear, not only for the coaches but the players. That relationship he had with Blake, because he's with Blake so much, I think he also had that relationship with the offensive line because of protection meetings they had, the receivers, running backs. So they all knew what he was all about. I think they really felt his energy more in the meetings. But it's been a good week.
You know, I think in his press conference he talked about, you know, getting Blake comfortable. And part of the conversation over the last couple of weeks has been getting Blake comfortable, you know, getting plays that he feels comfortable with, that he's had success with, to kind of find a rhythm in a game. How do you go about doing that with Nathaniel Hackett? How do you get Blake Bortles and the offense as a whole, because it's not all Blake, how do you get the offense comfortable but also maybe a little uncomfortable?
Right. I think that it does start with the coordinator and the quarterback. And because they've had so many meetings together, you know, in those quarterback meetings, although Nathaniel was a great support system for Ole, I think they also knew that Nathaniel had a certain philosophy and Blake has a certain a way of where his comfort level in learning. So that part has meshed together very well. And I think they see some things the same way. So in situational football, hey, it's 3rd and 4. Here's my philosophy. Well, I already know your philosophy. I know what I'm going to get from you, or I can count on from you. So I think that part has been cleared up. I think that's where it has relieved some anxiety for Blake, and that they've been able to get on the page quickly.
Well, the run game is going to be a big part of that comfort. Is play calling, will that help the run game, the desire to stick with that?
Well, I think it has a big part of it, you know, because when you have some success, and you know you're incorporating into it, and to have the runs and the passes feed off each other. You know, there were some games. What I think the Oakland game, we started off with 11 carries and 90 yards. You know, the average per carry, that's pretty high, and you know we got behind. But how do you in manage that in the first couple series, and what's your conviction on it? And then do the passes feed off the runs, and will you go back to the successful runs? And you know, really that whole process. So I just think that Nathaniel and I and the offense are on the same page with that and the direction we're heading.
All right, well, let's take a break here on the Gus Bradley Show. We come back, we'll talk a little Jaguars defense before we get to the Kansas City Chiefs. And also, we're going to take some calls tonight, 904-355-6351 or 1-800-355-NFL1 outside the calling area. We'll be right back here with the Gus Bradley Show on Jaguars Radio.
Welcome back to the HananiaAutos.com studio. The Gus Bradley Show continues right now.
And welcome back to the Gus Bradley Show as we roll along here. Sunday game in Kansas City against the Kansas City Chiefs. 1 o'clock kickoff, I believe, Eastern. Is that correct? It is correct. Okay. And good football team in the Kansas City Chiefs. An offense that will be challenging, certainly. Your defense getting back on track. That was a tough outing that they had on Thursday night. Does the offense... struggles, does that bleed over and affect the defense at times?
Well, you hope not. You hope not. It's a really good defense goes out there and plays for their unit and also will say, you know what, it's our job. If we get 3 points, that should be enough. You know, as a defense, you should have that mindset. And we got to get turnovers to give the offense the ball. We got to get stops on third down to give the offense a ball. But put all that on us. So whether you're down 10 to nothing or 17 nothing, shouldn't matter as a defense. But the reality is, I think it did start to affect us a little bit. And you can't have that as a defense. So that's an area that we need to grow as a defense and really get into that mindset. And I think you're hearing our players talk more of those concepts that we've got to get the ball more for our offense and more third down stops.
And the rushing attack, I mean, obviously you're facing two very good backs and a team very committed to the run game. Over 200 yards rushing that the Titans had. And a lot of people say, well, the Jaguars didn't have, you know, Jared Otterick didn't have Roy Miller. Watching the film, where you guys kind of got weakened or where you got attacked was more on the perimeter.
Yeah,
I thought that Dabry Jones played a very strong game in the middle, and I think Tyson Alualu played very well.
Yeah, it was just a unique night. You'd run a defense, and there was an unblocked player, and we just missed the play.
Leverage.
Leverage. And then you ran the same defense. They ran the same play, and it was a tackle for a loss. You know, and when you see that inconsistency, you know what, Logs? We just didn't play very well. You know, I think, and we take responsibility for it, and we feel very fortunate to come back and have another game. And although there was some time, I think that time sometimes is good too because it really sits with you and it forces you to have some really good days of practice.
The Oakland game, you had a couple players get into trouble, got ejected, and then Jalen Ramsey had the personal foul calls, and I enjoyed Dante's response that it's not going to happen again. You know, that a young player saying, look, he's realized, look, that I can't do that anymore.
Well, I you know, that's what you hope, right? You hope that it didn't carry over to the Tennessee game. They would learn their lesson. But sometimes they got to learn the hard way. And, you know, this game is a team game. And it's an emotional game. But your emotions can affect the rest of the team. So you have to make decisions based on that. And you got to play with a sense of, well, you can't be selfish on the field. And, you know, how it affects you, it affects the whole team.
This week, going to Kansas City facing Andy Reid. Been in the NFL a long time. 18th season as a head coach, his fourth season as a head coach with the Kansas City Chiefs. He kind of came in there. John Dorsey, the general manager, hired him. Any experience with Andy Reid? I mean, personally, I don't know Andy Reid, but, you know, from watching him and seeing how he handles himself, I've kind of been a fan of Andy Reid.
Yeah, he's a good man. I can say that we generally have conversation. I have not talked to him this year, but I know that in the years past that we've had multiple conversations, and I just got a lot of respect for him. He knows what he wants to do. He's got great conviction on it. He's a great head coach. The coaches have a lot of respect for him. The team has a lot of respect for him. And when you put on the tape, you know what he's after. And, you know, I think those years of experience have really benefited him well. So you're right. I think he's a good man, a guy that we hold in high regard.
They call him Big Red. Big Red, 177 wins, second most active, winningest coach in football, 123 losses, one tie. obviously behind Bill Belichick. And the place that he coaches in, Arrowhead Stadium, in my opinion, the loudest outdoor stadium that there is. I know that they set a record a few years ago when they were playing the New England Patriots there. But even going back to the time when I was there, that has always traditionally been a very loud place, going back to Derek Thomas, Neil Smith, Dave Craig, Barry Word, Christian Okoye. That place, it can absolutely rock.
It is. You know, and that's the first meeting we had and we talked to our players was we must be able to deal with the noise, you know, especially on the offensive side. It's going to be loud. Our communication's got to be important. You get false starts and it puts you off schedule. So those procedures that we need to get taken care of to allow us to execute at a high level, dealing with that noise is critical to our offensive success.
Well, and part of dealing with that, you know, noise, then you got to deal with the talented defense that the Kansas City Chiefs have. Number one in the National Football League in takeaways, 16 of them. And that's obviously taking care of the ball offensively has to be priority number one versus them.
It is. You got to make good decisions. And they're going to be a team that really executes very well on offense. They're going to make limited mistakes. They're not going to turn the ball over in their mind. And then they're going to put you in position to where you have to make mistakes. In their mind, hopefully they can get a lead. They can turn those edge rushers and let them hum and get some turnovers. So, you know, all the things that we talk about, you know, as far as, you know, taking care of the ball, making good decisions, sustain drives, keep it away from their offense, put some points on the board, and let's flip that and get our defense a chance to pin their ears back.
They've got, you talk about the edge rushers, D4. Had 3.5 sacks last week against the Indianapolis Colts. On the other side is Tom Bahaly, who has had a great career, still an effective player. And the guy in the middle, Derek Johnson, still fast. One is back in the day, he was Telvin Smith before Telvin Smith even got in the National Football League.
Right, yeah, he's a phenomenal linebacker for him. But, you know, in D Ford, we had him in the Senior Bowl. So we had a chance to coach him and be with him, and he was on our team. So he's got great energy. And we kind of anticipated he would be like that Leo type, you know, Logs, that undersized guy with great speed. There's a place for him in the NFL. So it's not surprising for us to see him have some success. And, you know, he's got to be a guy that we know where he's at because, you know, just like you saw last week, he can really affect the whole game.
How good is Don Terry Poe?
Another guy that when we talked about matchups, our three interior guys, you know, AJ and Linder and Pat, they have to have great awareness for him because he can really disrupt the game. They use him on offense down in the goal line. You know, we saw that where
he had a touchdown catch.
Yeah, they threw him
ago.
In a quick screen there. Yeah. So, you know, he's a guy that's very disruptive, a big physical type presence.
One of the biggest nose tackles in the National Football League. One of the most effective.
Yeah, he is. And, you know, I think every year you've seen him improve to where he's a dominating force now for him.
All right, well, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit of the Kansas City Chiefs offense. A lot of change going on with them this week with injuries that they've had, and we'll do that right here on the Gus Bradley Show on the Jaguars Radio Network.
Welcome back to the HananiahAutos.com studio. The Gus Bradley Show continues right now.
And welcome back to the Gus Bradley Show. And this segment is brought to you by Beards Jewelry at the St. John's Town Center, where exceptional is affordable. I guess taking a look at the Kansas City Chiefs offense, well, you talk about change. They've had some change personnel-wise. Alex Smith took two hits in the Indianapolis Colts game, has a head injury. Nick Foles is expected to play. Played a good portion of that game against the Indianapolis Colts. He looked good. I thought his arm was lively. I thought he was accurate. I mean, his rating, like a 135.
Right. Yeah, he's a very talented quarterback. If you look a couple of years ago when he was at Philadelphia, I think initially in that system, he had 20-some touchdowns, you know, very few interceptions, led the league, I think, in that percentage.
27-2.
So
in 10 starts.
Here's a guy that makes very good decisions. He's very accurate. You know, understands defenses, can read them very well when you have that type of success. And then put him in Andy Reid's offense and, you know, where it really puts you in a position as a quarterback to have some success. I think it's an extremely good match for him. So it's not surprising that they picked Nick up. I think it's great for Nick. And, you know, and he's really, you know, rewarded them back with good performance that he had last week.
Well, Andy drafted him back in 2012. So obviously Andy feels very good about him if he drafted him when he was with the Philadelphia Eagles. He talked about that 27-2 year that he had a couple years back. That was actually with Chip Kelly, highest ratio touchdown interception ratio in NFL history. When you mentioned, though, Andy Reid's offense, and it helps quarterbacks thrive, what's so good about his offense?
Well, he's committed to the run game. So it starts with the run game. They do a very good job in that. And they're happy, Logs, if at the end of the game they have 250 yards passing and 140 yards rushing, 130 yards rushing, and a couple touchdown passes, and, you know, they control the game, no turnovers. You know, that's a good day for them. So, you know, they go about it that way, and I think that style, very good at the short, intermediate passing game. But now they've got some threats out on top, you know, with Macklin and Hill, guys that can really take the top off of a defense. So, you know, they pick and choose when they're going after explosive passes. But now you're starting to see that come into it. So that's what makes them so efficient and hard to defend.
All right. I believe it's Chris. Let's go take Chris, take a phone call in here on the Gus Bradley Show. If you'd like to get in, folks, 904-355-6351 or 1-800-355-NFL1 outside the calling area. Good evening, Chris.
Hey, Logs. Hey, Gus.
Good evening, Chris.
I don't usually want to broach such a meaningless topic, but things have escalated recently, and it started with something small like Telvin Smith saying to the fans, "You're either, you know, he'd rather play in an empty stadium than to hear the fans boo," and Rashad Green saying if you've got negative comments, if you haven't played the game, he doesn't want to hear the comments, and A-Rob saying there's a bigger home field advantage at Wembley Stadium, to most recently Malik Jackson talking about how there are more fans in the pools. And I think it's gotten a little out of hand. Gus, do you have any thing you want to say to the players?
Yeah, you know what? I have addressed it in a team meeting. You know, we talk about connect with the following, with our players, and there's a certain level of frustration that we're not playing as well as we want. And, you know, I understand with our fans the frustration they feel. And, you know, for players, the best thing that we can do is win. The best thing that we can do for our fan base is go out there and play well. And any talk away from that is not helping. It's not helping the players, and I think it sends the wrong message to our fan base. So I think it's important for us to understand, you know, as players, sometimes you get frustrated and you want the best and you're looking for support. But that's not the way to go about doing it. No. And, you know, our players understand that. And I think we talked about today in the team meeting. And, you know, be smart. These people care. I mean, some of our players have been here for a year or 2 years, and they don't quite understand the frustration that the whole fan base is going through. And so, you know, I think it's important for them to understand that. And, you know, the players want nothing more than to get some wins and to do well for our fans.
I liked it better back in my day. We didn't have social media.
Yeah, I know. But you know what? I think it's, you know, when our fans, when they get passionate as they are, their blood's pumping. And to me, they're alive and they're vigorous and they got great energy. And that's a good thing.
Well, and the players, you know? Players' perspective is that, look, you know, you're busting your butt.
Right.
You know, you're trying. It's not like you're not trying. So a lot of times the players that take the approach of, well, how can you criticize us? How can you criticize me when I'm giving it my all and sacrificing to do this? So I understand the player's standpoint. I also understand the fan's standpoint. But like I said, I liked it better back in the day when there wasn't that
right.
Social media.
I think you do. You say, yeah, we understand the player's perspective. And you know me. I talk to the players and I listen to what they're saying. But it's still you know, let's put our attention on the things that can help us
win. Put the blinders
win on
yeah. And go to work.
You know what? So I understand both sides, but it's still about, you know, we got a great fan base. They deserve the opportunity to cheer us on. I think when you hear comments like that, the players are really saying support us, but maybe they're not saying it the right way, yeah. You know? And, you know, and I know because I'm around them. I know they appreciate our fan base. It just didn't come across that way.
All right. Thanks for the call, Chris. Let's take a break right here on the Gus Bradley Show. And when we come back, we'll continue on with the head coach right here on the Gus Bradley Show on Jaguars Radio.
Welcome back to the HananiaAutos.com studio. The Gus Bradley Show continues right now.
And rolling along, Jeff Logan along with the head coach, Gus Bradley. And Gus, the Kansas City Chiefs have a defensive back, Eric Berry, that I'm a big fan of. A guy that went and fought through Hodgkin's lymphoma, missed, I think, an entire season, maybe a little bit more, with the Kansas City Chiefs and has returned, and as many people still consider him an elite player, which he was before he was diagnosed and fought and had that little battle. Have you followed him, aware of what he's gone through?
Yeah, I mean, closely as far as when he came out in the draft. And Tyler Wolf, our assistant, he played with him at Tennessee and has a great relationship with him. So hearing stories about his personality and what he's all about and then having a chance to meet him. But I know across the league people have a great deal of respect for him, not only as a player but as a person and what he represents. So obviously they've got him back and their defense is playing at a high level, and he's a big part of it.
Yeah, it's amazing that he can come back, after a battle like that. And, he obviously came back because last year he had such a good year that they ended up using the franchise tag on him for this year. So, you don't use that unless a player's playing at an elite level.
Right. I think it's amazing for most people, but I think for him, that's who he is. I think he responds so well to adversity. I think he's such a great athlete and plays at such a high level. It's really not amazing to me that he's doing this well. Unbelievable, but that's who he is, man. When he gets an opportunity, he just plays like that every play as well.
Yeah, and in his seventh year, and the guy that is really garnering a lot of attention with the Kansas City Chiefs defensive backfield is cornerback Marcus Peters, and he's only in his second year. And, boy, what a great way to grow up in the National Football League for a young player like Marcus Peters to have a role model like Eric Berry in the secondary. And Marcus Peters right now, an unbelievable season last year. He had 8 interceptions. And this year he's already got 5.
Right. Well, he's a great ball hawk now. He is truly going out there looking for his opportunities. And I think their style of play operates under that assumption that, we're going to give players. It's very similar to what we talk about, allowing players to play fast and understand the responsibilities, stay within those, but then look for opportunities. And I think that's where he's a step above other players as far as his ball hawk skills.
All right, well, let's take a break here on the Gus Bradley Show. We come back, we'll take a look at the injury report and also talk about a little different week for the Jaguars than normal. And we'll do that with the head coach right here on the Gus Bradley Show on the Jaguars Radio Network.
Welcome back to the HananiaAutos.com studio. The Gus Bradley Show continues right now.
All right, Gus, before we get to the injury report, I haven't even brought up the tight end, Travis Kelce. Watching the film of him this week, I don't know if you'd really call him a tight end. The Chiefs line him up. They split him out wide. He runs a lot of wide receiver routes. He's not a great blocker. But he runs routes like a wide receiver, but he has a bigger body.
Yeah, he does. He uses his body very well. And you're exactly right. They'll put him out wide in the slot area. So they move him around, and they're really looking for matchups. So, there's going to be times, obviously, we're a man team, we're a zone team, and we got to give him some different looks. I think the big thing is to have great awareness where he is.
Yeah, he's, the last week, I don't know what happened. I don't know if it was the change of the quarterback or whatever, but he got a lot of balls last week. In fact, I wrote it down here. I didn't write it down.
I think they target him, first and second down. But a lot of times a guy like that third down, it's such a critical down for offenses to stay on the field and stay in that rhythm, keep the ball away from him. So that's where they, really like to target him because of his big body, especially in those medium to long yardage distances.
The Chiefs offense, too, we talked about Nick Foles being expected in the lineup, the left guard, Parker. Anger is how you say that.
Yeah.
I'm not exactly sure. He was a 4th-round pick, Cincinnati, towards the ACL last week against the Cincinnati Colts. And then at the running back position, Jamal Charles went to IR. Now Spencer Ware sustained a concussion, so now it's Charkandrick West in the backfield.
Well, West is a little bit different style back for him. He's about 205 pounds, somewhere in there. So a little bit different style than what they're accustomed to. But they'll utilize him. They'll use his skill set. But a little bit different style than Charles and Ware that you've, maybe seen the past couple weekends.
Yeah, he's not a big back. You said 205. You're dead on the money, by the way. 5'10", 205 pounds, and then they activated Bishop Sankey from the practice squad, who was former Tennessee Titan.
Right.
Seen him recently.
That's right. So we've had a chance to see him and aware of him. So, I think for them, it's, again, their system. They'll plug guys in. They might use a little bit more of the intermediate pass game. They might be so convicted to the run that whoever's in there, they're going to do the same thing. So there'll be a little bit different style, I think, with those guys in there. But for the most part, they've had great success doing what they do.
The injury report that came out today for your football team, there was only two guys that did not practice full. Aaron Colvin limited with a calf, and Jared Otterick did not practice with the foot ankle. Anything concerning with those two guys, Otterick and Colvin?
Well, I think those will be, you know, I think with Jared we'll find out more. Have a better idea tomorrow where he's at. You know, I know he did some activity today with our trainer, so we'll see, you know, what takes place after that. And then same thing with Aaron Colvin. That might be up to the game time decision.
And according to the Chiefs, Alex Smith limited both days yesterday and today. Is he out for sure?
Well, that's the way it sounds. You know, they already have said that. So, you know, I know they've talked about concussion protocol. So, you know, you go into the beginning of the week, there was some uncertainty. We looked at both quarterbacks. It's pretty clear now. So I think it gives us an opportunity really to zero in on that and to take a look at what options they have after that as well. I think you always know the backup quarterbacks that could possibly come in the game.
For you guys this week, big football game at Everbank on Saturday. Navy Notre Dame. Is Tim Walsh traveling with us this week, by the way?
You know, I did Walsh, talk to him. He is. Walsh's going with us.
He is?
That was a tough decision for him. But
Walsh is a cap guru, does some of the cap management contract stuff. He's a diehard Notre Dame fan. I'm surprised he's going.
I'm not. You know what? He bleeds. He's with us now.
I know. But I'm sure that when it comes kickoff time, he's going to be glued to the TV for the Friday night.
Yeah, you can count on that now. He's probably renting out his apartment for all his Notre Dame buddies that are coming.
And you guys, because of the game, obviously with Navy, there's a lot of dignitaries that come in for the game, and the stadium needs to kind of be cleaned up before everything goes on. So departing on a Friday this week, does that make anything different for you, for your football team, traveling on Friday versus traveling on a Saturday?
Right. Well, I think, you know, we'll still leave a little bit later, so we'll get in there Friday night. But it gives us another day. I think we looked at possibly Saturday, leaving Saturday, because the time of the flight really allows us to leave on Saturday. It's not like a truly West Coast trip. But just to get away, I think it'd be a lot of trouble getting out of there on Saturday, so we just chose to come out on Friday.
All right, well, let's take a break here on the Gus Bradley Show. We come back, we'll check in with the Bison, the North Dakota State Bison, and the Virginia Cavaliers. Almost pulled it out last week. Would have been a big victory, but they didn't do it. And we'll do that right here on the Gus Bradley Show on Jaguars Radio.
Welcome back to the HananiahAutos.com studio. The Gus Bradley Show continues right now.
And it continues on with Jeff Logman and the head coach, Gus Bradley. And Gus, the Bison, doing pretty good. They had the one loss, but last week they beat Northern Iowa 24-20 at Northern Iowa. Is Northern Iowa a good football team?
Yeah, traditionally they're a very good football team. I think the week before that they beat Western Illinois. So, you know, they've come back after a tough one in South Dakota State. And now I think they got, what, Youngstown State?
Yeah, isn't Youngstown State one of the other teams that seems to contend every year for that national title?
It was. You remember years ago, Youngstown State and Marshall went back and forth in 1AA, and that's where Jim Tressel was the head coach. So they've got some tradition. Bo Pelini's there now, the former Nebraska coach. So he's done a good job there. So that's always a tough game, tough matchup for the Bison.
Pretty cool that the Bison sweep the state of Iowa.
That's right.
I mean, they beat Iowa Hawkeyes.
Yeah.
Big win, national TV, and then turn around and beat Northern Iowa.
Right. I think they played, you know, Iowa
State. Who
did
they lose to? Who did they lose?
They lost to South Dakota State.
South Dakota State.
Yeah.
And they're the Jackrabbits.
I mean, that's Log's favorite one, man. Favorite mascot.
That's the one thing I remember, the Jackrabbit. Jackrabbit.
How about Virginia?
You know what? I was in a deer stand last week on Saturday, and I was getting a text from a buddy Mark. And he's like, wow. And then the next one was, boy, that took such courage. I'll use the word courage. And I replied to him. I said, what are you talking about? And he goes, the Virginia game. I'm like, are they playing? Was my reply. I didn't even know who they were playing. I didn't know who they were playing. But from what I understand it after the fact, they had Louisville beat on national TV. And then in the last second, they allowed Louisville, or last couple seconds, allowed Louisville to get the victory.
Right. And we had this conversation about Bronco Mendenhall. He's a good coach. And I know they've lost a lot of close games and, you know, against some very good teams. So, you know what, maybe I don't know who they play. I'm sure you're up on it, who they play this week.
I did look at that.
And who they play?
Wake Forest.
Oh, there you go.
It's a winnable game.
Yeah, JP, he's on it, man. He's a big Cavalier fan.
It's a winnable game because Wake Forest has high academic standards like Virginia, so it's comparable football teams. Okay? So you got to get evenly matched teams in that
situation. Is that the way, you know, when you went to Virginia, is that the reason why, the high academic?
No. No, trust me. I was an athlete, so I was able to get in, fortunately. But if I had been like a regular student, I probably wouldn't have got in. My brother got in, would have gotten in either way. But me, I don't think so.
You're saying they had to utilize the window?
Good luck this week, Gus. Thank you, Gus.
Thank you.
We'll talk to everybody next week right here on the Gus Bradley Show.